The Mysterious Circumstances podcast is hosted by Justin Rimmel. This is an American Crimecast production. Visit us at our new home at accproductions.org. Remember, everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law.
Probably most of you know by now, at 10:20 this morning, we made a positive ID.
He's going to be caught. Someone, somewhere, somebody's seen something or heard something. So we could solve this case and my little girl can get justice.
What she told me to do when I go inside to see her is not to scream and disturb the rest of the people inside the building. And they also told me I couldn't pick her up and hold her because if I did, her little head would fall off. So all I was able to do was hold her little hands and touch her little face and kiss her on her lips and told her that everything's going to be okay because Mommy found you. Sorry.
And one thing that day I took her shopping, she had cried about this. So she come up to me. She went back there and got a deal of chocolate milk. She didn't ask me if she could have it. She just get up there and look at me in those little puppy dog eyes like, Granny, can I have this? And I told her no. Then I had chocolate milk at home right there that I could make her right there. And to this day, I wished I had bought that chocolate milk for her. I know after she was gone right there, just that there, one little thing alone was I had to go to counseling for that because it was about to kill me. At the time, it was important.
Amber desperately needs justice. And as her mother, I'm not going to give up. I still have hope that he will be caught one day. And to Amber's killer, you know, I just have a few questions for you. You know, why did you take my little girl? Why did you touch her where you were not supposed to? Why did you terrify her? Why did you take her clothing from her? And most of all, why did you kill my little girl? My little girl is a 9-year-old innocent little girl. She loved playing with her Barbie dolls. She loved playing with her little brother, Ricky. And most of all, I want one question from you. And hoping I can get the answer is, how could you look in my little girl's tearful eyes and do what you did to her?
Welcome to the podcast. Today, we have a very unfortunately sad story. It is the Amber Hagerman story. And for those of you who don't know, Amber Hagerman is the reason for the Amber Alert that we have nowadays. Today, joining me is Brandy. And, Brandy, would you like to say hello and introduce yourself?
I'm Brandy. I'm from Chicago, but I live in Texas, and I'm familiar with the Dallas-Fort Worth area. I don't live there, but I'm familiar with Arlington. So I can give a little bit of insight on the case in that aspect. Ever since I was a little kid, I always loved cops. I love the theme music that started it off, so that was super awesome. I used to jam out whenever that would come on, running on the TV.
Who did?
And that's what started it.
Oh, man, I remember. I still watch that show sometimes just for the entertainment value of it, you know what I mean?
Totally. Can you catch it? An episode from the 90s, their cars and their attire. It's hilarious.
The shit I used to wear in the 90s, man. Ugh. If I could go back in time and kick my ass, I would. I guess that'll probably be the more lighthearted part of this episode, is talking about our fashion regrets of the 90s and shit. But I guess let's go ahead and set the pace here. Brandy, why don't you let us know a little bit about the background of all this?
Sure, absolutely. So the Amber Alert system here in the U.S. Is from the abduction, kind of stemmed from the abduction of Amber Renee Hagerman, who is a 9-year-old who was abducted in Arlington, Texas, which Arlington, Texas is just west of Dallas and east of Fort Worth. Arlington's almost dead center, and there's like an Interstate 30 that goes right through it east and west, and then there's also Highway 360 that runs north and south, and it's very close to this area, and we'll kind of go into how those freeways kind of most likely gave an opportunity for a quick getaway. So back in the 1950s, 1990s, Arlington experienced a population growth due to the automotive industry. General Motors assembly plant was stationed in Arlington, and the aerospace development in that area also contributed to the population growth. So the population in the 1990s was between about 200,000 to 300,000. Although the settings of these events happened in a neighborhood, the thought process was that there was workers and drifters in the area. Mm-hmm. Some undocumented, some documented.
Yeah.
So we'll kind of go into that as well. But basically, this covers a young 9-year-old girl who just wanted to go riding her bike with her brother, and unfortunately, she didn't listen to her mom. Her mom's like, hey, you guys can go ride your bike around the block. And she went a little bit further. She went into an abandoned grocery store's parking lot. Her brother said, you know, hey, we're way too far. I'm going to head home. And so he went ahead and head home. Meanwhile, she was abducted within this time frame. And by the time he makes it home, you know, they're kind of like, you know, where's your sister? So that's kind of the basis of how this all goes. Now, just to give you a little bit of background about the actual Arlington area. Arlington, because it's northern Texas, it gets a little bit cooler. They have cooler winters, and sometimes they get snow. So this was actually the first day that they actually had good enough weather for the kids to go outside and play. It's been like super rainy, super cold, all the days leading up to this, and this was the day that they kind of had a break in the weather, and that's why the kids decided that they were going to go out. So, and we'll kind of go over a little bit of that as well. There's also, we have a little bit of background on the mother and the father. Donna Whitson Norris is the mother, and the father is Richard Hagerman. Donna and Richard were actually separated at the time of Amber's abduction. A little bit of back history on that was they actually got married when Donna was really young. She was 19 years old when they got married, and Richard was 36 at the time.
All right.
Yeah, it's a little age difference there.
A little bit.
So Donna, as a teen, she actually had an illness, and it paralyzed her from the waist down. And just through therapy, and she was able to recover from that. And she actually was told that she would never be able to have children. So when she got pregnant with Amber, this was just, you know, the greatest gift.
It's a miracle.
Because she just did not think that she was going to be able to have any children at all. So it was just truly a blessing. And so Donna went on to have Amber's brother, Ricky, in which everybody calls Bubba, mm-hmm. which is from Texas. Every little boy is Bubba, whether you know their name or not. Bubba is like, hey, Bubba, give me that, you know, or hand me that or something like that. And they're going to respond. It just is what it is. So basically what it was is she was kind of on her own. She was going through a hard time financially. The local television station, WFAA, which is an ABC affiliate, they were actually filming a series on the Hagerman family and welfare reform at the time. So they had video footage of the mom, the daughter, and then the son, and how their lives were, you know, working through the system, and she's, you know, trying to get into school and trying to pick a better life for the kids. And
she was the definition of just the iconic single mom coming from the bottom to the top, you know what I mean? Or, you know, trying to get there. But it was actually, when I was reading about her mother, I was just like, you know, my mom raised five of us pretty much by herself, and it was like, I could really, you know, not to interrupt you, I could really feel like, you know, it's just extremely admirable because you don't see it very often nowadays.
Sure, sure. I mean, there was just such a passion there that she had for her kids. Like, even in the video footage of this reporter, which was reporter Pam Curry, she was actually the one that was filming the series that featured them. You could just see how proud she was of her children. And in some of the footage, they show the reporter, you know, sitting down at the table with the family, going over what they've done today in school and their accomplishments. Yeah. And it was just such a loving, you know, household that she had going there. I mean, even though they didn't have the funds, I mean, it was just so impactful to see that video footage of how this family was just kind of dealing with it. And they were doing their best. Mm-hmm. And it was just amazing. It was very admirable. So, I mean, she's awesome. So Amber, she's showing field day ribbons, AV honor roll from the school. She was a Brownie Girl Scout. She loved Barbies mm-hmm. and Pocahontas. So normal, average kid, just sweet as can be. And she just adored her mom. Yeah. I think in all the video footage that I saw, she referred to her as Mama. Mm-hmm. And she referred to her brother as Bubba, and Bubba referred to her as Sissy. And it was just, I mean, there's just so much love there.
Yeah.
You know, it's just endearing little nicknames that they had for each other. And they were very close to the grandparents. So Amber was actually abducted after she went to grandparents' house that morning, or that afternoon, rather. The tough thing about this is I was 2 seconds away from driving all the way to Arlington so that I can take a look at map it out. And I did get an opportunity to kind of look at the homes in the area, and they were, you know, definitely working neighborhood, you know. And just a lot of good folks. There was an elementary in the neighborhood, there's a middle school not too far. Like, there's just, everything's kind of within walking distance. The crime rate was not very high in that area. There was just like pinch of little things here and there, but for the most part, it wasn't anything to be alarmed about. And like any good mother says, hey, you guys can go ride your bike, go down the block, but don't go too far. I can almost hear her, because you hear every mama say that.
Yep.
Go too far, don't go where I can't see you, and stay together. I mean, that's just a given. So they decide, you know, it's after Christmas, they can finally get their bikes out. She actually went missing on January 13th of 1996. So this is right after Christmas. This is finally, they're getting the let up on the weather a little bit. And she gets an opportunity for her and Bubba to go riding down the block. And unfortunately, it takes a pretty sad turn. So if you look at Amber, I mean, just envision, you may want to close your eyes. If you're driving, don't close your eyes. But if you look at
please don't.
Amber, sweet little 9-year-old girl. She's like 4'11", so she's itty-bitty. She's approximately like 1.5 meters for international. She's about 80 pounds, so 36 kilograms. She's fair skin. She's got freckles, and she's a brunette, and she's got these bangs that hang right by her eyelashes.
Yeah.
That particular day, she had a ponytail, she was wearing pink jeans, and she had a gray shirt that had like different colored little handprints on it. And, you know, just sweet little kid wanting to go ride her bike, totally innocent, you know, just living the life. Yeah. Happy as can be to be able to go visit her grandparents and go ride her bike. I'm sure in the car they were just ecstatic that they were going over to grandma and grandpa's house. And as soon as they pull up, you can just hear them. I want to go ride my bike, you know, because it was Amber's mother, brother, and Bubba all arrived at the grandparents' house about 3 o'clock, and that was off of Highland Drive. Now, Amber and Bubba went to go ride their bikes about 3:10, so they were real excited
to get out
Yeah, I'm sure they were just bouncing in their seats on the way up.
I know that feeling. It's like, let's get to Grandma's house.
Yeah, absolutely. And the weather was great. It was a Saturday. The weather was clear. It was 78 degrees, so
oh, yeah, perfect.
Yeah, which is about 25 Celsius. It was around 3 p.m., you know, mild wind. The week leading up to the abduction, the highs were like 30 Fahrenheit. Or -1 Celsius. So it was pretty darn cold. The temperatures dropped, you know, the rain and all this stuff. So they get this one day to go to Grandma and Grandpa's house and go ride these bikes. And they just, you know, hop on their bikes and they're heading down the street. And Bubba knows that Mama just said, don't go too far. And Amber, being the older child, she was 9 at the time. Bubba's like 5. So he's following Sissy because he, you know, trusts her as the responsible one. And so she's heading off, and then he gets that feeling, we're going too far. I'm going to head back, you know. I'm just going to ride here because an old grocery store, which is an old Winn-Dixie, had so much room in this parking lot.
I'm not sure
they're visiting doing donuts in that park.
Popping wheelies, man.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean that parking lot, it's kind of off of a busier road than the residential, so they're thinking, you know, I've got this wide open space and I'm just gonna gun it. And Bubba heads back home. You know, as soon as he comes into the door, they're like, where's your sister, where is she at? He immediately says, well, she went over to the parking lot. Grandpa jumps in the vehicle and goes and heads up to the parking lot. Meanwhile, you know, there's an individual that's standing within earshot. This gentleman hears this child scream and sees a black truck pull up to her, basically just pull her off her bike, and she's screaming. And I know she was raised right, so she was probably kicking and screaming.
She was.
Throws her in the truck and takes off. Well, this gentleman that's the eyewitness gets an opportunity to get a description of this guy, and all that he can figure is that he's probably in his 20s. He's either a white male or he is a light-skinned Hispanic male. Didn't get a license plate, unfortunately. This gentleman, you know, he was just standing in his backyard, and he had a straight view for it, and he saw Amber riding up and down. She was by herself, and then, you know, here comes this pickup out of nowhere. And honestly, thank God he was out there. I mean, seriously. Because had he not been out there, even though the kidnapper's never been caught, well, the murderer, I should say, has never been caught, at least they have something. They have something. He takes off, and this gentleman, Jim Kevel is his name. Mm-hmm. He takes off. He calls authorities because a young girl screaming, being forced
to not gonna truck. Fly.
This gentleman is 78 years old.
Yep,
and he does not hesitate. He doesn't hesitate. He doesn't second guess. He doesn't care if he's wrong. He's calling the police. So by the time Grandpa comes from the house to the Winn-Dixie parking lot, the police are already there, which is amazing.
It is impressive. The way the authorities handled this, I mean, within what, 2 days, they had 80 investigators on this case. Just, absolutely. I mean, it was amazing. Amazing.
Yeah. If anybody were to have a parent of a missing child, this is the reaction that you want from local law enforcement, from the community.
Oh,
the entire community.
The whole community. Like, and you know, there's not too many good things that are going to come out of something like this, but seeing the way the Arlington community and the police pulled together, and I mean, just random people, like the person who came up with the Amber Alert idea wasn't even a relative of Amber's. Yeah. It was a mom from Fort Worth, Texas, named Diana Simone. And she's like, this happened because people didn't come forward and probably didn't realize what they were seeing. And, you know, there's no excuse for it. I mean, we'll get into some more of the details of why she was saying that here in a little bit, but go ahead and continue. It's the way the authorities handled this was great. And it was right on point.
Yeah, it absolutely was. And the community as a whole. So automatically, they start printing up flyers, and they've got a description of everything and anything, what she was wearing. The community starts tying pastel pink ribbons to the trees. They're posting missing flyers in storefronts. The parents are on the news. Although Amber's parents were separated, the father was very much involved mm-hmm. in everything. I mean, just superstar parents. I mean, they just came together, put all differences aside, and we're done. You know, like, let's focus on this baby. They're working. I'm sure that they're not sleeping. Their hearts are sinking. They're just, you know, praying for this for her safe return. They're pleading on the news for her to have a safe return. And honestly, there's tips that come in, but nothing that's solid. Mm-hmm. Nothing's like panning out. Yeah. It's just kind of a lot of hearsay. And so what they did is there's actually a laundromat or here sometimes they call them washaterias, whatever you want to call it. So it's basically a place that you go and you wash your laundry. So they have washers and dryers in there. And this particular laundromat was it had quite a few people in it at the time.
It did.
And so was that there was maybe some people that were immigrants that didn't have status here for the U.S.
Yeah.
And they may have saw something and they just didn't say anything.
Yes.
Unfortunately happens.
Yeah. Yes. I don't know, just to, I suppose, elaborate on some of the details, I guess, of what we talked about. Let's see, Amber Hagerman's grandmother actually still resides two blocks away from where she was abducted from. And the abduction was right at about 4 p.m. on a Saturday afternoon. This, time-wise, riding a bike, it matches up about perfect because of where they were. The full service laundry was in the same parking lot as the actual abandoned grocery store. And like you had stated, police do believe that a lot of people left before the cops got there and they actually did see what happened. And if they did, they would not report it because of their immigration status. Now, Jim Kevel, God bless this man, 78 years old, literally the only witness at 4 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon. And just to set the tone for everybody listening, this intersection, there's a reason that they didn't want their kids riding their bikes here. This intersection is literally from the north and the south. You got two lanes going north, two lanes going south with a median in between them. Now, intersecting with that, going east and west, is also two lanes going to the east, two lanes going to the west with a median. You know, it was a crime of opportunity. I mean, that was, you know, established pretty fairly on, you know, early on in the investigation because of the, I don't want to say the escape routes. I hate using that word, but it was to the advantage of the abductor for sure. But at the same time, you can't honestly fucking tell me that at this certain spot in the city that Jim Kevel is the only fucking person that saw something. Now, what he said he saw, he heard a scream and he was working in his backyard. He saw this all from his backyard. He was working, doing some yard work. He hears a scream. He looks to see Amber, just like you had said, she was kicking. She was kicking and she was screaming. But it just didn't do anything. Now, the getaway vehicle was a late 80s, early 90s black truck. It was stated to be a half-ton pickup truck, which for those of you who are not from any kind of rural area, You can tell the difference between a half ton and a full ton pickup truck pretty easily. All right. Now, like you had said, the man was of medium build. I believe it was, you know, late 20s, early 30s. Some said, you know, they pushed it all the way to 40. You know, I don't think that. I think it was more mid to late 20s, possibly early 30s. White or light colored Hispanic man. I don't know if you want to go, if you want me to go ahead and go further into this.
That would be great.
Okay. So the search, like me and Brandy had said, the search was fucking phenomenal. I mean, this represents kind of to me as a parent of two younger children. It reflects a lot of the Kyron Horman case that I had covered. The way the authorities handled this, they jumped on it. They were on it. Within about 2 days of her actual disappearance, which was on January 13th, a Fort Worth mother by the name of Diana Simone comes forward, and this woman actually reaches out to the radio station saying, hey, you know, we can give out alerts for, you know, tornadoes or anything of that nature for weather. Why can't we do this for missing children? And literally her only reasoning was because she was following the case and she was a mother. As she's following the case, she could not believe herself that in a busy area like this, that Jim Kevel was the only person that saw something. Because in all honesty, like, if I see a vehicle in an abandoned parking lot, I'm gonna immediately direct my attention to that vehicle, whether there's a fucking bike around or whether there's kids around or anything, because something shady as fuck's going on over there, or, you know, the truck is broken down, whatever the case may be. Now, on January 17th, near about midnight, the body of Amber Hagerman was found in a creek behind an apartment complex about 3 miles away from where she was abducted from. And she was found with her throat cut and completely nude, only wearing one sock. There was absolutely no physical evidence whatsoever. I can't specifically remember the location. I do know it was north of the 360, I believe, which is one of the highways right there, which we were touching base on a little bit earlier, which we will hear in a little bit more. There was no physical evidence other than a couple of fibers found. Literally, that was it. And with only one witness. Now, don't get me wrong, we will touch base a little bit in the suspects, which there's only one really good one that I ever found. And, you know, we'll touch base on that here in a second. But there was absolutely nothing. From the medical examiner said that the 4 days that she was missing, she was sexually assaulted for two of them, and she was dead for the other two.
My heart really goes out to this. This gentleman named Stuart Potter. He was just walking his dog.
He was. That's all he was doing.
So this gentleman's at this apartment complex, and he lives at the apartment complex, which is Forest Hills apartment complex, and he goes out to walk his dog. Now, like I said, it's been winter, so none of the trees around have leaves on it or anything like that.
And it was about midnight, so I mean, I'm glad personally that he was even able to see this, you know.
Right, absolutely. I mean, because she was kind of at the bottom of this creek bed, this like embankment that's there, you know, and he kind of looked a little closer and saw that, you know, a child's naked body at the bed of the creek. And so, you know, it had rained really heavy the day before she was found, so they're not 100% sure from the research that I did that she was actually like placed in this location or if she kind of drifted there.
Okay.
But it was an absolute blessing that this guy happens to be walking down this path alongside this creek that backs up to these apartments, and it's somewhat paved, and there's a little bit of a metal fence that's like high waist, but it didn't obscure the view. of this body that he sees down there. And so he kind of looks a little closer, and then he's, oh my gosh, you know, that's a body. And I was watching an interview, and he said, you know, I feel like she's part of me now. Yeah. And he just said, you know, I'm the one that found her, and so she will always be with me. And so I can't imagine how impactful that is, to come across something you're innocently walking by and see something so horrific. Just absolutely horrific.
Yeah, not even as a parent, just as a human being in general, I couldn't even fathom. I'll be perfectly honest with you. When I was looking into this, there is more than one time that, like, it got to me, and I had to take a step back.
Sure.
Because, sure, you know, kids, man, you know, that's one thing you don't fuck with, is kids.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, no.
Like, I can tell you right now, if, like, something like this happened to one of mine, and I knew beyond a reasonable doubt who did it, I would save the state a lot of tax dollars, and I would, you know, kiss my family goodbye, and I would put a bullet in this fucker's brain, you know what I mean, without even a hesitation. And I would spend the rest of my life in prison knowing that I did the world a fucking favor.
Yep, absolutely.
And you know what? Hey, forgiveness, you know, fuck that. I don't forgive nobody, like, fuck that.
This little girl was held alive for 2 days.
For 2 days.
Of just pure torture. It blows my mind what this poor baby went through for 2 days. And there's not a lot of information on that they've released to the public, but we do know that she was stabbed multiple times.
Yeah.
Like you said, she was... Her neck was sliced, I mean, nearly to decapitation, almost.
It was...
To the point where her mom couldn't even hold her once it was found.
Yeah.
You know, that just wasn't her... That wasn't just... It was an impossibility. And, you know, just to know that she had been sexually assaulted and she was nearly decapitated, that just... blows my mind. And I know that they said there were some fibers that were found on the bodies, but they didn't lead to anything. And the technology, even though it was 1996, wasn't too long ago, but it's so advanced now.
Yeah. It was definitely, I don't know, it was very intense looking into this, just seeing the details of it and what the family had to go through. Before we do start, I guess, touching base on our one suspect, why don't you, I know we had talked about it earlier, but the repercussions of the family. Her brother Ricky is one of the most guilt-ridden people like you will ever see. Like, even 20 years later, the dude, when they do press conferences, I know on the 20th anniversary, she didn't even want to do any kind of candlelit vigil because she's like, it still takes me 2 weeks to recover from it. She's like, I can't do it, you know? And she's like, it just takes so much out of us emotionally. And what she did on the 20th anniversary, which is people were really, really wanting her to, you know, do that vigil, especially, you know, because it had been 20 years. She actually penned an open letter to the killer of her daughter and left it at a locked post office or a post office box where the killer of her daughter could basically go in there, pick it up, and read it. The contents of which, even if I could find them, I wouldn't read them. You know, she never elaborated on what she wrote, and that shit is fucking personal. I would not want to read that, you know? And when they did their 20-year press conference, I mean, they're still just fucked up over it. And, I mean, you can't really blame them, you know?
Yeah, you could totally see it. You could see how the stress has aged them and how it just weighs on their heart. I mean, it's so sad. I know that they've never released the actual murder weapon to the public.
Yeah.
And I think in my mind, that's a key element that there, mm-hmm. it must be something unique.
That's kind of what I was thinking too, because I was really looking for any kind of connection to that, to the suspect, because the suspect is very specific and there's a lot of little details that match up, but as for physical evidence, they don't have shit. And your train of thought is right on point with mine. That's exactly what I was thinking too.
So since we're on the subject of actual suspects, there was a suspect that kind of came forward and claimed to be Amber's killer, and I might be messing up his name, but Terrapin Adhan.
Yeah.
I'm not 100% sure how you say that, but he came in, said that he did it. There was an entire investigation. I don't know why in the world somebody would want to say that they did something that they didn't do.
You know, I've pondered that question, especially when, you know, serial killers claim a lot of, you know, Ted Bundy killed 60 people. He goes in, he says he killed 200. It's,
right.
You know, and same thing with false confessions. It's like, dude, if you want to go to prison, just go rob a fucking bank. You know, don't claim fame, because here's the deal. At the end of the day, if he would have been convicted for this, he would have fucking died. In prison, you know, with very, very short amount of time, especially in Texas.
Absolutely.
You guys don't fuck around in Texas.
Yep. And that would have happened. So, and Huntsville is not very far from Arlington. So, that is the correctional facility that houses those with the death, that are facing death penalty, that are convicted. That would have happened pretty quick. They have no mercy for child killers.
Nope.
I mean, but you know, this guy decided to say, hey, I'm the one that killed Amber, put the entire family through, you know, all of the emotions and that go through all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And basically they figured out that he wasn't even in Texas at the time.
Yeah.
I don't know if thought maybe they wouldn't figure that out or something, but he wasn't even in Texas.
That's kind of what I was wondering about it too. It's like, you know, like we were saying, why are you gonna take credit for this horrible, horrible crime that obviously he didn't commit? You know what I mean? But he was sure shit pretty proud to take, you know, credit for, but actually it was later found that he had nothing to really do with it. So
there was also another gentleman named Dennis Bradford that was identified as a child abductor of another child, and he was thought to have possibly been Amber's abductor as well, but he killed himself. So that would never, and there wasn't too much evidence. It was just thought that it was very similar and that things were coming together, and there was a possibility, but it was never like a conviction, or there was never any charges that were pressed or anything like that. It was just a thought that, hey, he abducted this other person and it was just similar, and then he ended up killing himself, so that kind of went nowhere. But you came across a really interesting one, Bill Fry.
Oh man. Like we were talking earlier, I do not know how the fuck this guy has not been at least arrested. The only thing I could think of is why he really hasn't been arrested in connection with this crime is that they are waiting, or they do not have enough evidence to actually prove beyond a reasonable doubt, because there really was no physical evidence at the scene, and the only witness couldn't really match a description. By the time they found out who Bill Fry even was, the witness was passed away. So basically how this turns out is, in February of about 2011, I think, is when this all really started getting kick-started. There was this huge child porn network that was being investigated in Ennis, Texas. And Bill Fry, I believe it was his wife at the time and his stepson, they were living in an apartment. Believe it or not, they actually gave the straight up apartment number and address of this place, which was, I was like, there's a little detailed information there, man, you know, just throw that out there. It's like, hey, go find them, you know.
Right.
they found information that connected him somehow to the Amber Hagerman murder, the disappearance and the murder. I do not know what this information is. I really tried looking, and obviously it was pretty important if the cops and investigators are keeping it close to the vest. But basically, Bill Fry, during the time of Amber's disappearance, was known to frequent North Arlington. He was from the area. And the reason he would frequent North Arlington was because he would be picking up prostitutes and whatnot. He was in the middle of a divorce with his then wife, I believe. Now, Bill Fry drove a black GMC 1500. Now, that is a Chevy truck. And for those of you who do know this style of truck, it's a very specific truck when you see it, whether it's from a distance or not, because of the shape of the headlights, the box body, the tailgate, the bed, I mean, everything. You can spot this truck from a ways away. Now, not only did he drive a black GMC 1500, but he also had an apartment near UTA. He also had a master key to every vacant HUD home in Arlington, because what he did was he winterized HUD homes in Tarrant County. Now, for those of you, like, and I had to ask Brandy, I was like, what's a HUD home? And I should have known. It's basically subsidized housing for low-income families, which is what she was. Now, given the fact that he had keys to every vacant HUD home in the Arlington area, that gives him opportunity to hold somebody captive without any neighbors being able to hear anything or see anything, because these houses are vacant. Another good point about Bill Fry is that eyewitnesses actually reported, you know, after this 2011 thing was confirmed, the eyewitnesses confirmed that they had actually at one point seen a pair of girls' panties in his console, quote unquote, covered in blood, and at which point he supposedly had set them on fire afterward and burned them. The problem I have with this, I want to believe eyewitness, and it says this in actually plural, so it, you know, meaning more than one. I would like to fucking assume that any person with any amount of common sense in their fucking head, if they see something like that in an adult person's vehicle, that they're not going to wait X amount of years to fucking report it. You know, like, if I'm close enough to see that in somebody's fucking center console, I'm going to do something about it immediately. Whether slash a dude's tire so they can't go anywhere, or try to restrain somebody, or call the cops immediately, or follow somebody, or do something. So, to me personally, and this is just my opinion, that for me, I'm 50-50 on actually believing. And I hate saying that, because there's a lot of other shit that I'm gonna get into about Bill Fry that is fucking weird. But that right there is just personally for me hard to believe, that you're gonna see something like that and not report it actually immediately. Like I had stated earlier, he was known by his coworkers and relatives to frequent the North Arlington area. And while he was going through his divorce, he was up there looking for prostitutes. Now, another little funny fact about old Bill Fry is after Amber's body was found, he abruptly left Texas. He left Texas immediately for, from what we can understand, no reason at all, which is sketchy as fuck. Now, when he returned, he had plastic surgery done to his face to alter his face. Now, he eventually moved to Chino Valley, Arizona in 1998, and even neighbors in Arizona would see him, from what I'm reading. Yes, I am actually reading this. My memory's only so good sometimes, but this shit is so detailed, so don't judge me. But they would see him religiously washing and vacuuming his black truck all the time. So it's not out of the realm of possibility, because humans are creatures of habit. Okay, now if he's doing this shit 2 years later, there's no reason for anybody to believe that he wasn't doing it while, you know, something was going on with this case. Now, another weird thing about in 1998 about old Bill Fry here is that he was actually indicted for slicing his stepson's throat open with a knife. Obviously, this is the way that Amber was believed killed. I'm not sure if the other stab wounds for Amber came before or after, or if the cutting of the throat was just overkill, but that is a very specific thing. That is like a very specific detail. And the charges were actually dismissed. So, you know, the fuck's going on, Arizona? Like, what are we doing here, you know? Now, you know, above all those, in October of 2011, in Arizona, in Phoenix, I believe, Bill Fry was actually questioned in the murder of a Phoenix girl. So, beyond all of this other shit that you could probably, I mean, granted there's no physical evidence, and this is just not even so much hearsay because there is physical evidence. Dude has a black truck, you know, granted, and there's no forensic-wise, there's no connection to him and Amber. But at the end of the day, yeah, one coincidence can happen. I mean, the shit does happen. But 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Sure.
You know.
And the child pornography?
The child pornography. Fucking get on it. You know what I mean? Like, for fuck's sake. Like,
it blows my mind.
It honestly blows my mind. And I'm sure there's some really fucking good reason somewhere. And I'm sorry I'm dropping the F-bomb a lot in this episode. But these kids' cases get to me. And they aggravate me, and they make me very, very mad, and I take the shit personally. So, for all of you people who do criticize me cussing, I'm sorry. But, it is what it is. There better be some seriously good reasons for not at least bringing this dude in and detaining him in some way, shape, or form. Yeah. Because, even though you can't, you know, DNA-wise, I'm not that intelligent on. I now that I look back on it, I should have taken some time to research. I do know it is possible to exhume bodies for DNA purposes, but I don't think you can do it to extract DNA of somebody else. I'm not 100% sure. That would be something that I'm personally probably going to look into after this. But, I mean, all these facts, coincidences, the child pornography, he slit his own stepson's throat in an argument, charges were dismissed, he gets a facelift, he has plastic surgery done. You know, you got witnesses that say he had a bloody pair of child's panties in his console, at which point he burned them. It's just...
I just don't understand. If you saw a bloody pair of children's undergarments in someone's console, if you didn't address it at that moment, let's say that freaked you out and you just didn't address it, why wouldn't you immediately handle the situation as soon as that person leaves your presence? Why wouldn't you call the police and say, hey, I saw this with my own eyes. Yeah. This is a vehicle. This is where the vehicle is parked or whatever. Why wouldn't I mean, there's just so many opportunities. Yeah. Why would you keep that to yourself?
And that
blows my mind.
Exactly. And that's why I'm still kind of 50-50 on that fact right there. You know what I mean? It's kind of weird. It's like, first of all, like, what kind of fucking person are you if you're gonna sit here and not report that shit? Like, obviously you probably knew what the fuck was going on, but at the end of the day, when we actually look at like the main suspect, motive and opportunity, he had opportunity. He was in the area, he frequented the area, he knew the area, he knew the highways, he knew where to go. Opportunity, you know, motive. Obviously, the dude is into some serious child pornography shit if there's literally an entire investigation based on his fucking apartment. You know what I mean?
Right.
Which his wife and fucking stepson were involved in. And the fact that he did winterize abandoned HUD homes, he had keys to all abandoned HUD homes in the area.
Absolutely.
He had the opportunity to do anything he wanted. And to be honest with you, like, where her body was found behind that apartment complex, it's not hard to believe that he had to be close to the area. Because at the end of the day, you're either going to walk that shit in the middle of the night, and I'm not trying to get, like, gruesome, because granted, I've never done this shit before, you know what I mean? But, like, common sense, like, you're either going to walk the shit in, like, a duffel bag in the middle of the night, over your shoulder, something of that nature, but there's only two fibers found. That personally makes me think that she was probably not in a vehicle if she was taken there, like, by vehicle for very long. You know, because who the fuck's going to ride around with a dead fucking body in their vehicle just randomly, you know, and wishing for the best of luck, you know? So, like, I think he lived pretty, you know, lived or resided close to the area, and the abandoned homes just fucking matches that. It really, really does. And
it does. And also, the fact that so the police haven't confirmed what the murder weapon was.
Yes.
He was in construction. I'm in construction. I'm familiar with the tools that are used in the construction industry.
Yes.
So that would lead me to believe that whatever the murder weapon was, it wasn't your average weapon. It wasn't your average, I think if she was shot or, you know, I mean, we know that the throat was slit, but slit with what?
Exactly.
You know, are we talking about, I mean, there's a lot of sharp objects in the construction industry. So I think, and this is just, you know, trying to piece things together, there had to have been something that led them to believe there was a unique tool of some sort that was used to do this. And he had access to it all.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we look at, let's say we take Bill Fry off the table and we look at just, you know, a drifter, because, you know, a lot of things that came up were maybe drifters in the area that were working in the automotive plant or whatever. It's such a horrific crime, and the fact that he kept her alive for 2 days and then disposed of the body leads me to believe that this person, they had to have been, one, familiar with the entire area, two, they had to have had a place where they can kind of keep this confinement. And I don't know about you, but in Texas, a lot of drifters or people that are immigrants, they don't have the luxury of having their own apartment or having their own home. Or a lot of times you will see illegal immigrants that will live maybe, you know, 15 to an apartment, you know?
Oh, yeah.
There's not an opportunity for privacy. I mean, no. There really isn't. So that's why it kind of just ties back to this other individual. And so, although I've read some articles about, you know, just a random drifter, this didn't seem like a random act. He held her somewhere for 2 days and had a place to do that.
Yep.
And that just doesn't align with an immigrant. In my mind, it just doesn't.
No, I agree. And the fact that you had to carry a girl that was still possibly kicking and screaming into a fucking house or someplace, and then carry a dead body out. I mean, she was dead for about 2 days when they found her, so we're not sure how long she was actually at the scene. But, you know, window of opportunity time. He had 2 days to where he had to confine her. He had to be able to carry her in the house, to which, unless he knocked her out, she was probably still going to be crying or screaming or somewhat of kicking. And the abandoned HUD houses is literally the perfect place. It fucking fits.
I kind of wonder about the 2 days. Like, is that his MO to hold on to her for 2 days? Or did the media coverage and the community's involvement urge him to, unfortunately, kill her? You know, I mean... You kind of think, okay, was he abducting her and maybe make a child, slave or some sort of sexual, you know, slave or something like that? And was it just too much pressure? Because remember, within minutes, the police were there before Grandpa even got there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
At the abduction.
Thank you, Jim Cavill.
Yes, absolutely. Everyone's posting things. Everybody's rallying around this family and just, you know, I mean, there's just, her presence is everywhere.
Yeah.
And he's thinking, what am I going to do?
Exactly. Yep.
What that I'm going to do. He's panicking. He's thinking, I took some random kid and he thought it was going to be hush hush. And then here he's inflamed this entire city that's looking for her.
Yeah. And unfortunately, that's that's the darker half of the media being involved. Because sometimes you got a 50-50 shot on whether or not that's going to happen.
That's right.
You know, I mean, it's a double-edged sword. You know, as long as we're... I'm pretty good, you know, talking about Bill, I guess. I mean, unless you have anything else to add about, like, theories or anything. Just him in particular. Because the area where she was abducted offered literally probably the perfect way to get away, unfortunately.
Right. Whichever direction, it didn't even matter. It was just an easy getaway.
It was literally on the corner. He could have gone any direction whatsoever. And the witness, I don't even... By the time he went inside and called the cops, the vehicle was gone. He didn't even know what direction he went.
Yeah. I really do feel like it was a crime of opportunity. Although that she was had some media coverage with the story.
Yeah.
I don't feel like it was a stalker situation. I feel like it was... He was irritated. Something made him snap. Whether it be the, you know, a relationship or an argument or something like that, and he just thought, "I'm frustrated." And you know, it might have been a little bit of the weather too. Hey, I've been cooped up in my house, cabin fever. Let me go find somebody. Mm-hmm. He didn't find, let's say, a prostitute, or didn't find a girlfriend or somebody to call or something, and it was a means of opportunity. You know, he just kind of came upon a little innocent kid and just jumped on it.
I agree 100%. And literally Bill Fry is the only out of literally three suspects. And I believe at this point in time was almost about 21 years now. They've had 8,000 leads and they still get 2 to 3 leads a month on this case. Which is amazing in its own right, because Amber Hagerman is known as Arlington's little angel, and like, you know, it's
current rewards out there.
There is,
you know, the conviction. I mean, I'm talking nice size rewards, $75,000.
Yeah, I know one company in particular. Within a week of her disappearance, I believe it was in the first few days, raised $10,000. Just right out the gate. And that was what we were talking about with the community pulling together in the way that they did. It's fucking amazing. It is. I can't say for sure, certain that Bill Fry is like guilty of sin, but suspect wise, as much as there is to go on and putting the puzzle pieces together, this guy right here, I mean, granted, the media either helped or it didn't with her actual murder. I'm 50-50 on that. But, I mean, the pieces, they fit together too good to actually ignore.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say about the community coming together. Because remember, the family was low income.
Yes.
You know, and so this community came together and they put together a funeral for her. I mean, we're talking beautiful baby boo casket, a packed church, a plethora of flower arrangements. You know, candlelight visuals. I mean, all of these things. This was just the heart of this community. And I think that that's just so important to point out, because we unfortunately have missing children in this, you know, in the U.S. right now that maybe don't get the media coverage and don't get the community support.
Yes. I got contacted yesterday about one of those cases that, you know, that didn't get any media coverage whatsoever. That I'm going to be covering, and I had never heard of it. And the person who contacted me is going to, she said she would be willing to co-host with me because she knows the family of the victim and said that the family would actually be willing to be interviewed as well. And that's awesome. It's cases like that. That's like, cause she told me, she's like, nobody else will do this because nobody really knows about it. And for me personally, like, you know, Amber Hagerman has gotten media coverage even since before she was abducted and unfortunately killed, but everybody's story needs to be told.
Absolutely.
Because some, because, yeah, it's not about, ratings. It's not about whose kid it is. It's like, if it was one of our children, then yeah, I'd be all over it. But there is like we were saying earlier, one silver lining that came out of all of this.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that is going to be the Amber Alert. Such a blessing. And I know that there's some mixed reviews on how effective it is, but even if it's been in effect all these years and it's recovered one child, then to me, it's an absolute success. Now, within days of Amber's abduction, like her parents, you know, I kind of feel like this kind of leads into, again, back to Bill Fry, but her parents put together, established the PASO, which stands for People Against Sex Offenders, calling basically for laws for governing the sex offenders. They collected signatures and basically forced the Texas legislature to pass more stringent laws to protect their children. So the alerts were actually made manually at first to radio stations, but by 1998, the Child Alert Foundation created its first fully automated system of the alert notification system, also known as the Amber Alert. So this is named in her honor. You know, some people think it refers to the color of the signs on the on the road. Not the case. And I don't know about you, but on my cell phone, when I first got it actually already was pre-programmed for any Amber Alert or emergencies to come through. You actually have to deactivate it if that's what you want to do.
Exactly. So, I've actually been in a meeting with 10 people once in a conference room, and all of our phones went off at the same time. We knew exactly what it was, and absolutely, I will never deactivate that. Never, ever.
When an Amber goes off for us, or I'm driving off the freeway, you know, and I see a sign, I immediately start looking for that vehicle.
So do
I. Because, thank you, everybody should. And honestly, if I saw the vehicle, I would be the one to say, I'm calling the police, I'm talking to the mom on the phone, and I'm going to pull them, but I'm going to follow them.
Oh, I'm going to follow them. Yeah. I'm going to follow them all fucking day. I will.
I'm like,
I will not necessarily ram somebody off the road because there's possibly a child in there and it could be the wrong vehicle, but
right.
I am going to follow a motherfucker until somebody pulls that fucking vehicle over. You know what I mean?
Right. Absolutely. So Amber actually stands for America's Missing Broadcast Emergency Response. It usually comes on the TV, like on the ticker at the bottom. I've had, of course, your highway signs.
Yes. Continue. I mean, the highway signs is a big one for me, because if I'm driving through a construction zone, those fucking lights will change to whatever that Amber Alert is, and it's just like it's awesome. It's amazing.
Now with the Amber Alert, the thing is that it has to meet a certain criteria.
Yes.
In order to be considered an Amber Alert, which was a little bit confusing to me because here in Houston, we have, unfortunately, a lot of sex trafficking of minors here. And so, yes, they're reported missing and we see them on the news, but there's not necessarily always an Amber Alert. So I kind of looked into that. So first of all, law enforcement must confirm that there was indeed an abduction. So I think sometimes the older kids kind of fall into, well, maybe they ran away. And that's maybe why they don't meet the criteria. The child is at risk of serious injury or death. There is a significant descriptive information on the child, the captor, or the captor's vehicle. Or the child must be 17 years old or younger. And then it's recommended that immediate entry of the Amber Alert data to be in the system is put in the system for the FBI. So there's different steps that you have to meet. Now, if for some reason somebody doesn't meet that criteria, there is what's called a child abduction response team. And so that can help if they don't kind of fit that criteria. So it's not just kind of lost, you know. There's still going to be a task force of people that are looking for your child.
Yeah.
So I just think, you know, it's kind of tricky because if there's not any witnesses, you know, you might have a description of the child, but you might not have a description of the abductor.
Exactly. So. Now, we were talking earlier, how many kids have been successfully returned since the Amber Alert?
The most recent data, as of February 24th of 2017, there has been According to this data, 868 successful recoveries. And from what I understand, other countries have adopted this.
Yes, yes, they have.
Amber program.
Yes.
Because internationally, you know, people take hits out of the country all the time.
Yeah, and it's straight up. It's France, Germany, England, I know, is one.
Canada, Mexico.
Yeah, it's, which is fucking great.
It needs to be a world program.
It does. It really does.
It's kind of, especially with us here in Texas, we're so close to the border. Mm-hmm. And so when alert like that goes out, it goes out on both ends. And so any individual passing through the border or checkpoints, it's alerted, you know, really? That, hey, this individual might be transporting this child to your country. And then it's up to them at that point to handle the situation. It's just, we've all got to work together. And I think that Arlington, the community of Arlington, Arlington Police Department are just absolutely amazing, because unfortunately the killer has never been caught, but all the effort that was put into it was just amazing.
It was fucking heroic.
Yeah, to be perfectly absolutely honest with you. And the fact that Amber herself, unfortunately, her passing sparked all of this, but it wasn't in vain. You know, I mean, there's kids that are alive and breathing today because this horrific thing happened to this little girl, and she saved this many other lives.
Exactly. And that's literally the only good thing that came out of this, but still emotional, you know? It's
funny, this case was an absolute tough one. I mean, you got to think, did the killer panic from the amount of media coverage? You know, could have been prevented. Then we've got, you know, the brother, he was 5 when it happened, and he's
survivor's guilt still beats himself up over it. And then the mother, I mean, within 2 months of Amber going missing, her fiance at the time was killed in a car wreck. And then 2 years later in 98, her older sister died unexpectedly from a seizure disorder. And then another, 11 years later, her then husband died of a massive heart attack.
Absolutely.
It's just like, and how much, and this woman, like we were discussing earlier, in all honesty, she's one of the strongest people. She literally referred to herself, like, in an interview as just a human voodoo doll. She's like, anything that I love is going to die, so I just need to be alone. Like, I'm not going to love anything else. And it's just like, you know, and she appreciates the fact that the Amber Alert has saved so many kids, but at the same time, it didn't save hers.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it's so tough. And if you watch the footage of this family and the way that they interact, I mean, this lady, that child, her both of her children were just her world.
They were,
she didn't have the means to financially give them maybe some of their wants. And so she's putting stuff on, like, layaway.
Yeah.
She's forecasting, I mean, layaway for this baby girl for her birthday. She loved Pocahontas, Disney's Pocahontas at the time. I mean, she put on layaway bed sheets for this baby, you know, and she throws her this birthday party, and Amber's opening these bed sheets, and she's almost in tears because it's her favorite character. I mean, she is just blown away that her mom was able to get these for her. And it's just so impactful, the love and the bond between these two. You know, that love can never be separated.
No.
It's just not going to be separated.
Yeah.
I will say something, and this might be a little bit creepy, but I'm going to
go ahead and say what you got to say.
You know, I almost want to send, like, a message to the killer. Because, you know what? This guy is Googling it. This guy is...
You know he's up. You know he's up to date with what the fuck's going on.
Yes, because this wasn't the... I firmly believe that if this indeed was the first time, he's got to be the luckiest man on earth to have not been caught.
I don't think it was the first time, and that's another reason why Bill Fry strikes me as odd, because him actually being connected and questioned in another child's murder.
That's right. And so this isn't his first time. This isn't his last time. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to just say this right now, that I know that he, with technology today, you kind of want to see where things are at. And yeah, this is a real popular case. And, you know, they're never going to be able to trace it back to me that I'm looking into this data and stuff like that. But curiosity kills a cat, right? So mm-hmm. he's looking up stuff. So if that is indeed the case, we know that she's always on your mind. Maybe something you remember, something that, you know, that reminds you of her and what you did to her and this horrific crime and this horrific thing in my mind that you've done to multiple children. You know, you'll never have peace. You will never have mm-hmm. peace. You may or may not feel remorseful. I don't really know. There's just the peace that you had died when you killed Amber. And whatever other children you hurt.
Yeah,
so you're going to live this life just tormented by what you've taken. And Amber's life and the will always mean something to everyone. And unfortunately, it didn't mean anything to you, but it enhances the rest of us.
Yep, that's exactly right. Very well said, and not creepy at all.
Thanks.
No, that was very, very well said, because at the end of the day, that's how it is, because if he is out there and he is listening, he knows people are looking for him.
Absolutely.
And he knows people are piecing that shit together. There's been more than one case with more amount of years that have gone by that people get caught. All it takes is that one thing.
That's right. I just hope that happens before he dies. Because the murder happened here in Texas, it'll be swift.
Oh, yeah. That's how Texas rolls. Like, no bullshit. Like, I admire Texas because, like, legit, man. Like, they do not fuck around. If they know within a reasonable doubt, or if you are seen doing the crime or you confess to it, you're on the fast track, man.
Absolutely. And I'm not just talking about through the justice system.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, you're on the fast track. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that child killers, child rapists, you know, nah. Mm-mm.
Mm-mm.
Doesn't work that way.
Uh-uh. But I guess, I don't know, I suppose that's about all I got for this one, Brandy. How about yourself?
Yeah, that's about all I've got. Just a little bit of aggression and high blood pressure right now.
Oh, I definitely feel you. I'm actually very proud of myself for not fucking breaking down and having to stop recording for a minute, because
I
cracked a couple times. Like, I felt it in my voice, I cracked a couple times, but I held my shit together.
That's right.
But I suppose, do you want to say goodbye to everybody? Brandy, thank you very much, by the way. You came professional, like, you had your shit together, and you did a phenomenal fucking job, so...
Thanks so much. I just want to say that, you know, I hope that we keep this case alive. I hope that that's, you know, it continues to change people's life and impact them in a positive way. And, you know, I hope that the killer is found. I do. And I hope that he gets my message. But, you know, as of right now, we can focus on this never happening to another child.
Well, I think the best part about this podcast is after people hear that guy's name, there's going to be a lot of fucking Googling going on.
To find him.
There's going to be a lot of amateur fucking web sleuths that are going to hunt this motherfucker down.
I love it.
I do too. Brandy, like I said, thank you very much. You did a phenomenal job. You picked like one of the saddest fucking cases I've ever done, but definitely one that I do not regret you choosing, because... I had known about this case. I was, you know, about 15 when it happened, so I was familiar with it as it happened, and as a parent now, I am so thankful for the Amber Alert. So thankful.
Sure.
I don't know, I guess, with all that being said, Brandy, I will see you on the flip side, and all you listeners, I will see you as well.
Bye!